morning prayer, it becomes qaza.
Exactly, yes.
Also, when the sun sets, we can say the azan is going to be announced, the call to prayer, after some minutes, and then you are, for example, allowed to break your, we can say, fasting and do iftar. So, Sheikh, what are the ways of determining the beginning of the month? I mean, according to the religious authorities and maraji.
Of course, as according to most of the maraji, first of all, the person who wants to, for example, fast or stops fasting, he himself must see and let's say, witness the new moon by his own eyes. So if someone sees the new moon by his own eyes, witnessing himself or herself, then of course he can either start fasting at the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, or for example observing Eid, for example Fitr, when he sees by himself the moon. So yes, this is the first way that we can prove the Eid, or let's say the new moon day. And then the second way is that some trusted witnesses tell you that, of course, they saw the moon. Those people on whom you trust, and for example, you know that they are faithful people and they never, for example, lie about seeing the moon.
Yes.
Of course, this can give you a kind of certainty by which you can, for example, break your fast and say that, of course, now is Eid, for example.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second way. The third way is that, for example, sometimes your marja'i taqlid or maraji, or let's say the hakim al-shara, orders that, for example, this day is the Eid, and
yes,
and
they witnessed, the beginning of the month. That's
right. Their witnesses, okay, for example, witnessed and saw the moon. Based on their witnesses, they came to this conclusion that, of course, this is the day, the Eid of the Eid of Ramadan, for example. And then the other way is also there, that some of the ulama says that according to the scientific, or let's say according to the astronomers, or let's say the scientific kind of discoveries, sometimes becomes for sure that this is the new moon, this is the day of Eid, then of course you can observe, for example, this way by the scientific kind of means as well.
Yes, that's all right.
The month of Ramadan is more significantly about turning to myself. What have I done for myself? What am I going to achieve in this holy month of Ramadan?
A lot of you will find yourself saying, oh my God, I can't do this or say this because I'm fasting. Why can't you export that outside the month of Ramadan? This is why these 30 days are training grounds for us. They're springboards for us. And so we have to use these tools that we have in front of us to achieve that perfection, inshallah.
Who is hosting you? Get to know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As-sawmuli, there is a hadith Qudsi, as-sawmuli wa ana ujzabe. God says, fasting is for me and I am the reward of it. Some that read this hadith, wa ana ujzibe, I reward for it, that's even good. And God, the generous, will not reward less than paradise. But here we can read it in a different way, that God says, I am the reward of it.
And Sheikh Rouhani, what are the main reasons for difficulty of sighting the new moon, which makes disagreement between recognition of the new moon of sighting between some, for example, even ulama? We can say they have different opinions on the beginning of the new moon.
You know, the problem is that sometimes, for example, the new moon is very much close to the sun, And it is really difficult to see physically. Sometimes we have to use some means and equipments, modern equipments.
Like telescopes.
Yeah, telescope, things like that. Then, unfortunately, here some of the ulamas are of the view that this kind of seeing is not trustable.
Because is not naked eye.
Yeah. And that is why it becomes sometimes difficult. Sometimes because of the distance, a short distance from the horizon and the line of sight, possess, let's say, through a thicker kind of layer of the atmosphere. So, and thus dust or humidity and, let's say, atmosphere distance, let's say, disturbance makes seeing or sighting moon difficult, okay? Mm-hmm. This is another difficulty that we have. And sometimes due to the closeness of the moon to the sun or, let's say, the duration of the crescent's pause above the horizon is short,
yes,
and the observer has little time for the moon to be seen.
Yes.
That is why there are some sort of difficulties sometimes that may occurs that may happen when we want to see the moon. That is why we need sometimes the ulama maraji to decide about it by the help of either the technology or the modern technology or naked eyes, whatever,
yes,
to at least to tell the people what should they do, either there is aid or not.
That's all right. And there are different criteria between different countries in order for announcing the lunar month.
Mm.
What are they exactly and what is the main difference?
You know, there are in some countries, there are a kind of committee. The members of these committees are the trustable scholars, for example. In different countries, we have this system that this committee finally decides whether the Eid is there or not, like in India, Pakistan, Morocco, yes, Bangladesh. Many of these countries, they have a group of scholars, trustable scholars. They gather together and finally they decide that whether moon is seen or not, okay?
Yes.
And sometimes, for example, sighting the moon, even by using, let's say, binoculars or let's say telescopes, these kind of things, after the sunset of the day, let's say previous to the first of the month.
Yes.
Iran is, for example, in some months, they have used these kind of ways, the Shiite scholars here.
Yes.
Or verdict of the court of the sighting of the, let's say, crescent upon the sunset of the day previous to the first of the let's say critical months,
yes,
which is mostly Shawwal, for example, after the holy month of Ramadan or the month of Dhul-Hijjah for performing Hajj.
Yes.
So yeah, these are some of the ways, okay, by which the different countries decide finally.
Is it allowed to, for example, establish a kind of organization or committee for observation groups or sighting committees?
It is, of course, in each country, because they are not of the same horizons or the same ufuq. That's why finally they themselves should decide whether, mm-hmm, for example, yeah, there are some countries who are very much close, yes, to each other. If in one country Eid is there, then of course in the neighboring countries also there. But sometimes you have countries like New Zealand, like Australia, like Canada, which are far from each Islamic countries. That's why it is good to have like committees for let's say announcing the new month or the Eid by this committee. The member of this committee should be trustable scholarly figures, and also the experts and professionals finally to help the people to understand whether the Eid is there or not.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration. Of course, one of the other ways to confirm the sighting of the moon is the verdict of the Sharia ruler, isn't it?
I mean,
for example, when a Muslim ruler, Hakim al-Shar'. For example, now in Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei is the Sharia ruler,
yes,
okay? And his committee usually officially announces, we can say, the beginning of the month, of the holy month of Ramadan or Eid al-Fitr or something like that. So we can say, and in some countries, mostly the fatir and the offices of Maraj also refer to the Sharia ruler. That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min labani Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
This is not the first time Palestinian people are spending Ramadan under Israeli aggression. In 2014, the Israeli regime also waged a destructive war on Gaza during the holy month. However, the current genocidal war is unprecedented in terms of its colossal casualties. Many Palestinians have become orphans and widows and lost their children. The memory of their loved ones will stay with them in Ramadan.
The life here is so difficult. The holy month of Ramadan is around the corner and we are still displaced from our homes and our families are torn apart. We have nothing to eat for iftar. I'm originally from Gaza. I've lost 37 members of my family. They were so close to my heart. Every time I remember them, my gut is wrenched and I become so sad and furious.
With markets destroyed and goods scarce, Gazans don't know where their iftar meals will come from, which means more suffering and agony. The vast majority of the people live in small tents amid the starvation that has already claimed the lives of several Palestinian children.
The situation in Gaza is very difficult. There is no food. The people are struggling to find anything to eat with flour scarce. Here in the south, they queue in long lines for food. Even those who attempt to get anything from the aid trucks are putting their lives at risk as Israeli soldiers open fire on them. I don't know what we're going to do in Ramadan.
Palestinians' catastrophe doesn't stop with the loss of their relatives. It is deepened by the full-scale destruction that has become palpable in every corner of Gaza, including mosques, which means they won't be able to say their prayers and worships as usual. Even if their mosques hadn't been destroyed, it would still be impossible for them to perform their prayers under the incessant Israeli bombardments.
The humanitarian conditions are completely disastrous. The people were displaced from several parts of Gaza, including the northern and central areas of the Strip. It is literally catastrophic. There is no source of income or food, and the people are completely relying on the small amounts of donation provided by a limited numbers of charity institutions. In addition to that, mosques have been completely destroyed by Israeli warplanes and we will never be able to pray in them.
While some aid has been trickling into Gaza, it's minuscule compared to the needs of the Palestinians. With Ramadan arriving, more assistance cannot come soon enough for them.
As the whole Muslim nation welcomes Ramadan, Palestinians are wondering why they have been abandoned by many Muslim leaders. to face the Israeli campaign of death and starvation to Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Iranian National Oil and Gas Company says that this is the most strategic project in the history of Iran's oil and gas industry and its long-sought empowerment of domestic entities. Under this project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas and 2 billion barrels of gas condensates will be available for use. Top Iranian companies Petropars, Oil Industries Engineering and Construction, Khatam al-Anbiya Construction Headquarters, Mapna Group, and a consulting company are the contractors of the mega project.
In the subject matter of the development and increase of capacities of the gas and oil refineries, we witnessed the second phase of Abadan refinery with the capacity of 210,000 barrels, which helped the production and supply of gas in the country. In the 14th phase of the South Pars refineries, 50 million cubic feet of gas is produced per day, which again adds to the capacity of gas production in the country.
The massive project has created an opportunity to kickstart economic prosperity and employment in the face of unilateral Western sanctions. This has also allowed Iranian producers and companies to engage greatly in the economic growth and industrial development of the country and neutralize the sanctions.
Today, all Iranian people should witness the fact that the surrounding nations trust the Iranian National Oil Company and the relative competent companies and contractors and do rely on them, because they know well that the South Pass was built by Iranian companies, and the day that they thought that it was impossible to do so without the help and presence of foreigners, that exact day was the day that South Pass became what it is today.
While sanctions have forced the governing bodies to change their attitude towards domestic companies and entrust them with tasks, it should be noted that Iranian producers are not perennial supporters of sanctions. Rather, they would like to interact and acquire world-class technologies from foreign companies to empower themselves.
With contracts for developing oil and gas fields signed and projects for boosting pressure in South Pars gas field being started, Iran is experiencing yet another success in the mega gas project to exploit the immense gas field. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Chants echoed through the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad as thousands of demonstrators gathered to condemn the United States and Israel.
Ceasefire now!
The protest, organized by Pakistan's largest religio-political party, Jamaat-e-Islami, saw passionate crowds marching through the streets, expressing solidarity with the Palestinian cause and denouncing Israel's actions, which take place with the support of the U.S.
Of course, there should be a ceasefire long ago, but even now we are pressing for it, and you have seen how irresponsible and insensitive Biden has been responding. He was just having ice cream and talking about ceasefire as if it was a very casual affair. And on the other hand, the way children are dying, women are dying from morning till night, and especially there are a lot of prisoners which are taken by Israel. And there are large number of women and children who have been taken as prisoners, and their condition is pathetic.
The acts of solidarity in Pakistan reflect widespread outrage and sympathy for the plight of the Palestinian people.
As a Pakistani citizen, I think that our government should immediately call for a ceasefire and boycott all the products that are supporting the Israeli aggression in Palestine. And I also want to say that the whole world should come out of their houses and protest, because the kids, Palestinian kids, are starving right now, and they are being starved, and they are scared, and they are homeless, and they have nothing to eat and drink, and they are dying. And how can anybody bear that?
The protesting Pakistanis called on the government to cut its ties with the U.S. over what they call the barbaric role in the killing of innocent men, women and children in Gaza.
People here in Pakistan are concerned about the ongoing atrocities committed by Israeli forces in Gaza. They are demanding that the international community enforce an immediate ceasefire by bringing the U.S. and Israel to the International Court of Justice for their war crimes in Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrians have long been accustomed to eagerly welcoming the holy month of Ramadan, brimming with joy and happiness. But this year has brought an unusual sense of sadness as the harsh economic conditions exacerbated by unjustified Western sanctions is casting a shadow over their celebrations. Moreover, their hearts are heavy with sorrow for their brethren in Gaza, who endure the devastating consequences of the ongoing Israeli onslaught.
We are going through a painful situation as people do not have money due to the poor economic conditions. As store owners, we are trying to consider the people's circumstances by reducing prices during Ramadan. However, basic production materials are expensive due to the importing difficulties.
Ramadan is always a special month, as it is a month of worship, patience and blessings, especially in Palestine. However, this year, it is as if Palestinians in Gaza have been fasting for more than 5 months. We pray for them and gain our determination, patience and steadfastness from them, from the brave faces of Gaza's children, the resilience of its resistance fighters, and the patience of its steadfast women.
Ramadan comes this year while the Western world, which claims freedom and humanity, practices double standards with the people of Gaza, who are suffering from hunger, blockade, and Israeli crimes. Palestinians are paying the price for demanding their freedom and legitimate rights. Syrians will always stand with them until the final victory over the Zionist regime and the liberation of the occupied lands.
The month of Ramadan comes this year amid the continued unjust Western economic blockade on Syria. We see our people in Gaza suffering from blockade, hunger, killing, destruction, and continuous Zionist aggression without deterrent.
Syrians are a living nation because they have defended resistance, and the Palestinian people are the soul of resistance. We say to the West, you will lose, and the access of resistance from Iran to Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Yemen will prevail. We will break the Caesar Act and all your blockades on Syria and Gaza, and we will all pray in Al-Quds.
Syrian message to their brothers and sisters in Gaza is that no matter how difficult our circumstances may be, your tragedy in Gaza remains even more challenging, and your resilience is an inspiration not only for us, but for all free people around the world.
Syrians welcome Ramadan this year amid hard economic conditions due to unjust Western sanctions and with heavy hearts for their besieged brothers and sisters in Gaza. Yet their commitment to the resistance fuels their faith in eventual victory. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Yemenis is from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities and chanted slogans in praise of the Yemeni army's naval operations. They also reaffirmed their full support for the Palestinian people and pledged to continue the protests until the Israeli genocide ceases.
The Yemeni government, all its members, its president and the people have one position, which is to support the Palestinian cause. We must thwart the American, Israeli and British project and stop starvation in Palestine. Our position is an honorable position, and our broad movement indicates that the Yemenis have great awareness and, God willing, victories for the nation will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the U.S.-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British and Israeli-linked vessels and regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and high-tech weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female. Two-thirds of France's working poor are women, in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
Une femme qui est tuée tous les trois jours en France.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists. And they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, President Joe Biden and his Republican rival Donald Trump have traded barbs over the death of Laken Riley and immigration policy. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump held dueling campaign events in Georgia on Saturday, 9th of March, and traded barbs over the death of a nursing student and immigration policy as they turned their focus towards the general election. Their campaign rallies, which were the second time that Joe Biden and Donald Trump were in the same state in recent weeks, were underscored by the recent death of Laken Riley, a University of Georgia nursing student who was killed by an alleged undocumented immigrant from Venezuela whilst jogging on university campus. President Biden apologized during an interview with MSNBC on Saturday, 9th of March, for using the term illegal to describe the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley during the State of the Union address. He said he shouldn't have used that specific language. They're an undocumented person, and I shouldn't have used illegal, it's undocumented, Biden said. Biden added further criticism of Donald Trump calling immigrants vermin, saying they are poisoning the blood of our country. Trump seized on the comments from Biden blaming Blake and Riley's death on Biden's immigration policies. Trump met with Riley's parents backstage before his campaign event in Rome, Georgia, a city of about 38,000 in Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene interrupted Joe Biden's State of the Union speech on Thursday, 7th of March, which prompted Biden to say Riley's name. "They just told me prior to what I'm doing right now that Joe Biden went on television and apologized for calling Blake and Riley's murderer an illegal," Trump said at his rally in Rome, Georgia. "Biden should be apologizing for apologizing to this killer." On immigration, Joe Biden and allies have gone after Donald Trump for encouraging congressional Republicans to vote against the bipartisan border bill earlier this year. Maryland's Governor Wes Moore, a Biden campaign surrogate at his Atlanta rally, said it was really rich for the former president to talk about the importance of immigration reform, and he's the reason that it died. The Peach State is a crucial battleground for both campaigns. Joe Biden won Georgia in 2020 by 12,000 votes, making it the first time that the traditionally red state turned blue in nearly 30 years. Just 60 miles away from Donald Trump's remarks, Joe Biden held a rally in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, as his campaign continued a post-State of the Union launch into the general election. In his remarks, President Biden has kept a focus on his contrast with Donald Trump. "Donald Trump has a different constituency. Here's the guy who's kicking off his general election campaign in the road up with Marjorie Taylor Greene. It can tell you a lot about a person who he keeps company with," Biden said in Atlanta, Georgia, noting that Trump had met with autocratic leader Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban late on Friday afternoon at his Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida. Rebuilding his winning coalition in 2020 of minority voters, specifically black voters in Georgia, will be critical for Joe Biden. The campaign has said they're investing in media buys for black and Hispanic-owned media outlets and the largest political committees representing different minority groups, all endorsed by Joe Biden on Saturday. But while President Biden has made headwinds motivating these groups at the start of his general election period, his current support among black and Hispanic voters is lower now than it was back in 2020, according to a CBS News opinion poll. Black voters show up in inspiring and unbeatable numbers to vote for progressive issues and candidates. "Our concern is not so much how will black voters perform, but how will the rest of Georgia perform," said Karen Blair, an organizer with the New Georgia Project, a voting rights organization founded by Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams. At the same time, the concerns and the critiques black communities have levied against the administration cannot and should not be ignored. Donald Trump's trip to Georgia comes as he seeks to clinch the GOP nomination. The former president is the only major Republican candidate still in the race after former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley dropped out of the race, but he has not reached the requisite delegate count. Trump is within striking distance, and voters in Georgia may deliver Trump the required delegates to officially become the Republican Party's nominee. Another national broadcaster, ABC News, has also covered the same story and tells us more. This week, former President Donald Trump was declared the presumptive Republican nominee, setting the stage for a rematch election between himself and President Joe Biden. Now the two held dueling events on Saturday 9th of March in a battleground state that secured Biden's victory and a Democratic-controlled Senate in 2020, namely Georgia. Donald Trump is in Rome, Georgia, and President Biden participating in campaign events in Atlanta, Georgia, as the campaign announced plans to aggressively step up its campaign operations. As the former president continues to campaign heavily on immigration and border security, he used his appearance in Rome to highlight the recent death of Laken Riley, the nursing student from Georgia who was killed. At Saturday, 9th of March's rally, the campaign handed out posters of Laken Riley's face with phrases, "Remember our angels," and "Say her name" on them. Donald Trump met with Laken Riley's parents before he took to the stage in Rome. Trump criticized President Biden for getting Riley's name wrong during his State of the Union address and for walking back on using the word illegal. Undocumented persons, Biden said when his use of the word illegal was raised in an interview with MSNBC. "And I shouldn't have used the word illegal, I should have said undocumented." Trump at a rally in Rome, Georgia on Saturday responded to Biden's apology saying Biden should apologize for apologizing. "Now he was illegal and I say he was an illegal alien," Trump said. "He was an illegal migrant. He was an illegal migrant and he shouldn't have been in our country and he never would have been under the Trump policy." Trump also again offered a scathing review of Biden's State of the Union address at his rally in Rome, calling it angry, dark, hate-filled rant. Trump also mocked Biden's speech.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station. Choo choo ka-choo, it's the Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider, and here in the studio we have with us the illustrious...
This is Asma. I am going to be here again in Youth Station with Brother Muzaffar, which is so much of a pleasure, of course. Well, as for today, we are going to talk about destiny. The never-ending topic that would always be controversial. Yeah.
Laylatul Qadr. Exactly. And that is the game changer, sister. It's
Did
a game changer.
Do they call it the Night of Power?
The Night of Power or the Night of Destiny.
Destiny.
All right, fine.
It's
yeah, Night
more
of Destiny.
Relatable.
Yeah, I guess destiny would be closer.
Destiny is
I think it's because of the Arabic
closer.
Word Qadr. It has both of those connotations, power and destiny.
Yeah.
That's like the beginning of your spiritual new year.
Yeah, exactly.
Your spiritual new year.
Yeah,
you
holy
have a physical
month of Ramadan,
new year, you have a lunar
actually.
Calendar, you have a solar calendar. Okay, mm-hmm. That's all to do with this dunyawi life. But your spiritual calendar actually begins on the night of destiny. And on that night, as you know, it's better than 1,000 months. So
okay. If
you calculate it, it's like 80 plus years. So it's like an entire lifetime. An entire lifetime that you can spend just on that one night. Okay. you do have an active role in shaping your own destiny, and that's a big part of Islam.
Am I the one who's shaping my own destiny? So what about the things that happen into my life without my intervention?
Oh, yeah. If we're talking about the difference between... Look, Imam alayhi salam, he was approached and he was asked about the, you know, predetermination versus free will.
Yeah.
Right? So he said, okay, lift up your leg. So the guy lifted up his leg. And then he said, lift up your other leg. And he said, I can't. He said, exactly, it's like this. Half of your destiny is sealed. Your fate is sealed. Mm-hmm. But half of it you do have effect over.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't choose to be born. You were born.
Exactly.
But you get to choose what you do
so
with your life.
So half of it is actually
in my it's kind of like 50-50. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said...
You're somewhere in between.
Yeah, he said, Amrum bainul amrain. It's between this and between that, mm-hmm. right? So according to the Shia school of thought, that's what it is. Right, you can never say that you're entirely in control. You're not. You're simply not.
Of course. And then you cannot say that I'm entirely out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So everything we do, at least about everything we do, we're accountable.
There's a brilliant hadith that Imam Khomeini talks about. And that's how you know it's authentic, by the way. Imam Khomeini himself talks about it in his book, 40 Hadith, and it's about when the Holy Prophet went on Mi'raj. You're going to love this, sister. You're going to absolutely love this. It's when the Prophet went on Mi'raj, right, which was his heavenly ascension, and he saw many of the realities of life, universe, and everything. And over there, he saw some angels, and they were creating a beautiful kingdom. But every once in a while, they would stop creating it. Mm-hmm. Then they would start again. Then they would stop again. Then they would start again. And he asked, why are they stopping and starting? And they said, well, Ya Rasulullah, the materials, the heavenly bricks that we're using to build this kingdom only comes to us when the servant does the dhikr of Allah.
Yeah.
And every time he stops doing dhikr, we stop receiving these resources.
The material, the raw material.
Yeah, the raw materials for that jannah that we're creating. So Imam Khomeini goes on to explain that we are actively creating our hereafter. We're actively either creating our Jannah or our hellfire. You know, there are verses of the Quran, for example, where it says they are eating fire into their bellies. When you're doing an injustice to somebody else, when you're stealing somebody else's right, when you're eating that unlawful whatever it is, you're actually eating fire into your belly, and you're just not able to experience it right now. But the reality is that we are, every breath that we take, every action that we make, every niyyah that we have, every intention that we have, we are actively creating our hereafter. What's your favorite name of Allah out of, for example, the 99 names?
Okay, let's go for a break and then I would share it.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
I asked sister what her favorite name of Allah is.
Yeah, and I'm ready to answer. By the way, this is Youth Station and we're talking about destiny. So about the names of Allah, there are a lot of names, but the thing that comes into my mind very much directly, just as you mention it, the first one is generosity and the second is kindness.
Oh, alhamdulillah.
Generosity and kindness. I love these two names of Allah.
It's one of the questions that I love to ask people because it reveals so much about that person, right? So for you, Allah's generosity, His kindness, His rahmaniyah, His rahimiyah, they are so important, right?
What about you?
Khaliq, Al-Khaliq, the creator. For me, that's the most extraordinary name, the most identifiable name that I would call Allah with. Have you ever done these experiments when you're trying to understand the fifth dimension, for example, and they show a two-dimensional being, an imaginary two-dimensional being? That two-dimensional being can never try, it can never comprehend the third dimension, the dimension that me and you live in.
Yeah.
It just cannot. It can try, but it can't. And in the same way, we cannot comprehend what the fourth dimension is.
Yeah. You see, I get what you're saying. Like, for example, you say you're attracted by the name of Allah, which is related to creation. And I guess God has given us, as human beings, whatever power needed to be creators like Him, but not just like Him. Because just as you said, He's going to prove it to us that no matter how improvement you're going to go through, no matter how much flourish you're going to be in your own creations, but you're not going to cross that line and get to me. Like, my creation is not comparable to none of yours.
The best forms of art are imitations.
Yeah.
They're just imitations of the creation of Allah.
The copy of a copy.
Yeah, that's all we can do. And my point was this, that people think that Allah created us and we've been created. Ta-da! No. Actually, the process of creation is still taking place.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, He's given us the ability to create ourselves. And we are creating ourselves up until the Day of Judgment.
Exactly.
Where we'll actually see what we've actually created. That's when we're going to see the finished product. It's like painting in the dark. That's what we're doing. We're trusting in Allah and we're painting in the dark. And when the light goes on, the Day of Judgment, the sun rises, we're going to see what we've actually created, what we've become.
Exactly, yeah. No, that was very nice. Are there any specific things that we could do to change our destiny?
Yes. Pray for others. Pray for others. Sayyidah Fatimah al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. Sayyidah Fatimah, remember, she's praying for others. This is her normal night, but I'm saying that was her thing. She would pray for others, pray for others. Imam Hassan, who was a young child at that time, he said, "Mom, when are you going to have time to pray for us? When are you going to pray for yourself?" When Allah sees this sincere servant praying for other people, He loves this so much that He will give to you more than you could possibly ever pray for yourself for anyway. And it's very difficult to do. I want wealth, I want kids, I want happiness, I want this, I want that. Oh, another thing that we should try to pray for is not necessarily specifics. Mm-hmm. Specific things may not be the best thing to pray for.
You mean we must ask for general things?
I'm going to say that we should pray for the feeling of things.
Like?
For example, I don't have a car right now, so I can pray for a car. Inshallah, within a year, I might get a car. But what am I actually looking for through a car? I'm looking for a sense of independence, a sense of freedom, a sense of ability to get from here to there, you know, a sense of comfort as well. Right now it's snowing and it's impossible to get around on a bike, right? Now, instead of praying for the car, what if I say, "Oh Allah, expand for me my means. Oh Allah, make it more comfortable for me to get from A to B."
Like,
oh,
we
Allah.
Must be wiser in asking things.
Right? Why? Because look, I pray for a car, Allah will give me a car. Well done. But it could be when I pray for something, like, "Oh Allah, give me the means to get from A to B." It could be that tomorrow I end up with a helicopter.
Yeah.
It could be that Allah doesn't give me a car, but He gives me a limousine with a personal driver. Don't necessarily pray for specifics. Allah knows better, yeah.
Yeah, of course Allah knows better.
And the last thing, right?
Yeah.
Pray big prayers, man. Pray big prayers. Imam Ali alayhi salam, I think it was Imam Ali, he said, don't look at the smallness of your sin. Don't think, "Oh, it's a small sin." Rather, look at the greatness of the one you're disobeying. And in the same way, don't look at, "Oh, how big your problems are." Like, as they say, don't tell your God how great your problems are. Tell your problems how great your God is. Right? Allah can move mountains. He can do anything. He can do, like, anything. Like, literally, it's unlimited. pray for big things. Exactly. Pray for zuhur of Imam Zaman alayhi salam.
Because through that, all the problems are going to be solved. Yeah, as you just rightly put it, we should not be so narrow-minded in the things we want. We have to think outside the box. To have this larger scale sort of thinking is going to help us too much in our prayers. Like, as you just mentioned it very much correctly, we should ask for the feelings of the things that we want. Like, I want peace, for example.
Yeah.
Whatever I want in this life is to help me have more of peace. So instead of asking, give me this, give me that, grant me this, grant me that, I can just ask for peace and for, you know, all that feeling that would give me so much of peaceful thinking.
Yeah.
You know, there are some bad things that might come up to me, like an accident, like just as I live here, an accident might happen to me. But then if you pay sadaqah, or if you devote a specific money for other people who are called the downtrodden, then also that's another way to change your own destiny. Like, we have it also in our narrations that if you pay sadaqah, you're going to sort out 70 difficulties that might get into your way.
Yeah.
So that's also another way to think about it, to devote a specific amount of your money for the people who are in need, for the people, because that is going to show how considerate you are of all your fellow people in your own city, in your own society, in your relatives, among your relatives. This is very important, because people are living in a very busy world in which they do not even know what's going on to their sisters and brothers. So even their relatives are suffering, but then they think they are helping the society.
Yeah.
So at first, you must look at your own relatives, see if they're in need or not. Then you can lend a helping hand. That would do a lot to you and to them as well.
I think we're running out of time, but I'll just quickly throw this one in there. So you put a little bit of sadaqah, a little bit of prayer, a little bit of reading the Quran. Don't neglect that. Praying for others, praying for good, big things, and learning a little bit. It's going to be like an entire lifetime of actions right in there.
Try to, as just the brother mentioned, devote your time into different parts, and then try not to forget the main and general things that you want to have, because those are also important. And everything is said, I suppose, according to the time, because we're running out of time. This was all that we could share with you in this very limited time. This was all. Thank you for listening and for joining us. Until another session. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ya Latif, 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 Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.